The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
I signed for them after the Euros. And after my first day's training, I was driving home. I was actually thinking,
regretting it.
What have I done? Like I walked into a circus.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing, isn't it? Right, Liverpool's festive and New Year dip, as it's now being called. Where should Jurgen Klopp be looking in the transfer market this January, or should he be shopping for players at all, Nathan?
Yeah, I think he's got to be looking at centre-back. The fact that he's playing Jordan Henderson there suggests that he doesn't trust Nate Phillips or Reece Williams. Like, Nate Phillips is 23. He was out on loan last season at Wolfsburg. There was a sense he was going to go in the summer transfer window, and then needs must, he's forced into action. Reece Williams is still a very young, inexperienced player. You would think if he felt one of them was going to be an adequate replacement, you played him as much as possible. Where it feels at the moment, if he's stuck and he needs a bit of freshness, he'll throw one of them in. But that, I just can't see how he can continue with constantly rotating his centre-backs for every single game, which is what it is at the moment, because Joel Matip simply can't stay fit. So he's going to have to go and look. It's a difficult market because it's not just a case of, say, looking around the Premier League and, you know, teams that are in the bottom half and who's a good centre half. It's a, you know, Ben Mee or a Tarkowski at Burnley or a Lewis Dunk at Brighton. He needs a defender who can play in his system, who can play that incredibly high line. So there's not many of them around, you would think. Does he go after Alaba at Bayern Munich? Would Bayern Munich sell, considering Liverpool are one of their two best rivals for the Champions League? You know, would Bayern hang on for the 6 months and just let his contract run down rather than let him leave right now in January? So there's not a huge amount of options out there for Klopp, but whatever is available, he's got to go and do something, because this can't continue. This is going to hamper.
Well, hang on a second, right? So it's not like it was the defence that meant that they didn't beat Newcastle, and they only conceded one against Southampton, and the West Brom game was only a concession of a goal, and the Fulham game, was that a one-all draw as well? Like, it's actually their inability to score goals against supposedly inferior opposition that's really costing them at the moment.
Yeah, look, the front three aren't firing in any way. And like, Firmino's form has been inconsistent for going on a year at this stage. Sadio Mane hasn't got to the level he's been at last year so far this season, where I think Salah's been the one at times dragging them through. And you'd wonder as well about the relationship at times between Salah and Mane. It doesn't ever seem to be particularly strong. But everything Liverpool do as a team is built as a team. So the defence is a key part of the attack, and the attack is a key part of the defence. So you need the front three pressing high to make sure that the back four can push right up the pitch. And there's no question that they're missing Virgil van Dijk's passing ability, that when teams are sat back, that he can rake this 70, 80-yard ball out. And how many times did you see it to Alexander-Arnold or to Robertson? Liverpool now, like last night, Liverpool, it reminded me of the Spurs-Arsenal game from a month ago. And Liverpool were Arsenal. That's how bad they were. It was so predictable, never-ending crosses into the box. And I think a month ago when we were talking about Arsenal, we said, well, look at where Liverpool crossed the ball. They cross it from far deeper when Alexander-Arnold and Robertson are coming onto it. Now, whether teams have copped onto that or whether actually the fact that Van Dijk isn't there and they're picking the ball up in different positions. Like, Robertson's crosses were all from that position, just on the edge of the area, easy to defend. They look like last-ditch tackles, but they're simple enough clearances. So I think actually, while Liverpool are probably never going to have too many of the Aston Villa days where there's a full meltdown, that even conceding a goal a game is worse than they were last season, and that also they need the defence to be a part of the attack, and they need to be sure that the defence is rock solid so that Alexander-Arnold and Robertson can get forward as often as they want. One of the reasons that Robertson is so good is because he had Van Dijk alongside him, and he could go forward and know that Van Dijk would always be there. Alexander-Arnold, we know, isn't as strong defensively as Robertson. And who does he have alongside him? Reece Williams, Nate Phillips, Jordan Henderson. You know, if they could keep Joel Matip fit, but there's nothing we've seen to suggest that he's going to stay fit. And the other question Liverpool have, you know, I know people say it's January, do you go and spend 40, 50 million? Well, what is the long-term future? So when Virgil van Dijk comes back, you know, he's going to be heading for 30. Joe Gomez is the one they're putting a lot of trust in. But again, he's always injured and has another long-term serious knee injury that at some stage you just need to go, well, maybe we need another centre-half partner for Virgil van Dijk for 2 or 3 years. Maybe we need to go and buy that player we're thinking about waiting for another 18 months and we just need to get him in now because needs must, because a title could be gone. A title can go very quickly. And Liverpool have already cost themselves the Champions League by dithering, by not going and signing a goalkeeper and sticking with Lloris Karius. That cost them a Champions League title. So you would hope that they've learned their lesson from that and realised that you just can't hang around, that you go and spend the money and you find the player.
The difficulty is that they got not so lucky, but there was a little bit of fortune regarding how good Virgil van Dijk has been, that there was always a chance that with that massive transfer fee, he wouldn't reach the heights that he did, like becoming the best defender in the world. I'm not sure, was that actually the expectation from Liverpool fans? They expect him to be good, but not best defender in the world level. So the bar is so high now, Nathan, for this next defensive transfer to hit, that if you're talking about a long-term successor in the centre of defence, God, you can't even afford like a Harry Maguire-esque signing a la Manchester United at this point. It needs to be a 70-80% of Van Dijk's success.
Yeah, that's almost impossible to find. But I do think, maybe not, I don't know about all Liverpool supporters, but you talk to people who know about centre-halves, talk to Gary Breen. When Liverpool were on the verge of signing Van Dijk that January, Gary Breen was saying that this guy is going to be that transformative figure at the back of the defence. Like, did anyone expect him to go on and become the best centre-half in the world? I'm not sure, but I think expectations were incredibly high. They knew what they were getting. There's a reason that every top club were interested in signing Van Dijk. I just think that, like, Liverpool have two options. You sign a stopgap and you spend 35 million and hope it works and gets you through somehow to the end of the season. Or you just go and you spend the 50 million, 50, 60 million on someone you've been eyeing up. And we don't know what's happening behind the scenes. Liverpool do their business very quietly. They pop up with a Diogo Jota and everyone goes, oh, Jota was barely even playing for Wolves for a lot of last season. And again, he comes in and straight away you see a bit of a transformation, how he fits into a system. So that's why I think Liverpool would be looking for a defender, not just an experienced old head who can come in, actually somebody who can play in that incredibly high line, that incredibly high press that Liverpool want to go with, that's what Jurgen Klopp is going to want. And it may be somebody that's not on that sort of regular shortlist that you see of Alaban, Upamecano, that a lot of other clubs are interested in. He may be looking for a very different type of defender.
Yeah, look, their scouting system should be able to belch several names out that would be suitable for that. And I think, to Owen's point, that actually anybody who comes in, once Van Dijk comes back, is going to look pretty good if they can stay fit. All you have to do is be his partner and you will look good because he is so good. Like, you know, there will be a betting in period, obviously. You will have to get through the initial baptism of fire when you don't have him. But if you can survive that, then it's going to be a success, more than likely, because of the quality of the defensive shield they have in their midfield trio and also then whoever plays beside him as well. Rumours yesterday, though, that Madrid had won the race for David Alaba. So that's the deal or no deal on that one. Richard Redball says, Nathan holding back the Liverpool tears. And Shane saying, can't wait to hear Nathan defend Liverpool performance and then run down United performances. It hasn't happened, Shane. He compared them to Arsenal at their worst. Things are obviously pretty bad.
It's going to be that sort of season. I'm sure Miguel Delaney was pointing it out last night that, like, and it goes with Rory Smith's column as well. I don't know if you read that about there've been so many games all the time and that they're all on television that there's very little time to actually pause for breath and go, well, here is what's developing, because like Arsenal are in crisis. Like last time we spoke before Christmas, Arsenal are in absolute crisis. And then they go and win three games. And, oh, maybe Arteta's finally starting to find his feet. The one thing for Liverpool actually is there is a break now for them. Okay, they've got the cup game against Villa. I presume Liverpool certainly will put out a second string side for that.
Not what David Moyer thought. Not what he says. He
really?
Five or six. The front three will probably play. Because there's a week between... That game's on Friday night and the United game is the following Sunday.
Sunday week. So there's nine games. But there's, from a league point of view, there is actually a lot of time for Liverpool to have to sit through this now, where Manchester United have another game. Because the chances are United are going to go to Anfield, top of the league, ahead of Liverpool. So for once, there's actually going to be a bit of a talking point, a bit of a story in the build-up to a game, rather than it just being different teams playing different days, that actually now we have a full-on discussion around a title race involving Liverpool, involving Manchester United, and maybe more importantly, and I'm sure he's loving this conversation that's going on and going to go on around Manchester City, who are just sitting there, a couple of games in hand, ready to pounce.
Yeah, no, definitely City looking pretty good at the moment. So the Independent in London report that Chelsea are ready to give Frank Lampard time to turn things back on track. Tuchel, Allegri, Brendan Rodgers, Hasenhüttl, Andriy Shevchenko, have all been linked with the club. Shevchenko will be the most Chelsea signing as their manager of all time. Will Lampard be the Chelsea manager at the end of the Premier League season, and who would your replacement be?
I think he will be the manager at the end of the season. Again, it's just happening so quickly. When do you find the time to sack him? Like, is this the time now when there's a little bit of a break and there's an FA Cup game and you give a manager a full week to try and settle in? The one issue around Lampard and the problem he faces, and he'll have seen this as a player, is that it generally works for Chelsea when they sack the manager. When they bring in an Avram Grant or Roberto Di Matteo, that, you know, they make an impact. That changing manager has historically worked for Roman Abramovich. Sticking and, you know, whether it was Antonio Conte and just letting it sort of ride out till the end of the season, hasn't. So he won't be wary, I think, of even an Andrei Shevchenko. Like, who would have thought that Avram Grant and Roberto Di Matteo would enjoy success with Chelsea when they come in as caretaker managers? Like, maybe Shevchenko. Does this current team look at Shevchenko as a superstar and someone they'll respond to? I just think it's very hard to find a spot at the moment to sack him, and that maybe his legendary status might just get him to the end of the season. But if they don't finish top four, it's hard to see how he survives past the end of the season.
They need to see an uptick in form. They need to see the players that they invested all that money in showing some signs that they're playing up to the level of the investment. A reminder, OTBAM live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. The Mirror reports this morning that Crystal Palace, West Ham and Burnley are in a three-way race to sign Irish young gun Jason Knight. According to the Star, it's a four-way. Newcastle are also in the mix. Where do you think the 19-year-old rising Derby star will end up? Is he ready to play Premier League football?
Well, Derby are on the verge of a takeover at the moment. So while teams might be trying to steal in there ahead of that, if that takeover happens, if Wayne Rooney is given the job on a full-time permanent basis, you'd imagine they'd be mad keen to keep Jason Knight. He's played pretty much every game so far this season. So even though he's only 19, I don't think Derby will want to let him go, and certainly won't want to let him go on the cheap. You often hear the debate about, well, should he stay, should he go? But like, if you're offered the chance to go to a Premier League team, there's very few players that are going to turn that down. Derby are in a relegation fight. So you would hope that once the behind-the-scenes dealings and the takeover goes through, that they should settle and survive in the Championship. But that's at least another 18 months in the Championship. Whereas any ambitious player is thinking, all right, Burnley, I can force my way in. Newcastle, I can force my way in. They're not thinking, oh, well, you might be stuck in the bench half the time, not getting quite as much football. So I think if one of those clubs with a big bid come in and Derby accept it, I'm sure he'd go. But if he was to wait another 18 months, is he suddenly at a different level of club that he's going to? Like, Burnley is a strange one in that if we've seen, you know, Kevin Long, Jimmy Dunn, Sean Dyche doesn't change his team. Is he looking for a central midfielder to come in instead of Brownhill or Westwood, whoever he's playing in there at the moment? Like, he doesn't change his 11 all that often, even in these sort of crazy run of games. Newcastle, how long is Steve Bruce going to last? They haven't really settled on a central midfield ever. He looks good enough to get into any of those teams, but they all have a little bit going on in the background that you'd kind of worry about for him.
Okay, is there a comparison, like a player that he reminds you of? What type of midfielder is he?
Box to box. You know, loves to get a lot of energy.
I'm hearing Roy Keane.
You were going to go Roy Keane. I was going to go slightly further down the pecking order and say, was there a time that maybe similar clubs he's been linked to, a Jeff Hendrick when he was starting off? Maybe not quite, but yeah, it's an important move from. The last thing you want is to make that move and then spend the rest of the season getting the odd minute or two here and there.
Yeah.
So I just think that the fact that Derby takeover is happening and due to happen in the next couple of weeks, surely they're not going to let him leave.
Okay, so we brought you news yesterday. PSG boss Mauricio Pochettino has his eyes on Harry Kane, Dele Alli and Hugo Lloris. The latest update is that Ali is not expected to go in this window. Do we do want to know, how excited are you, Nathan, to see Pochettino in Paris? Is there a Premier League side who will regret not snapping him up?
Is anyone excited about anything that happens in Paris Saint-Germain? I'm not sure they are. If he goes and he dips back into the Premier League and suddenly Dele Alli goes, you're probably going to keep a closer eye, but they're going to win the league. That's a given. What can he do with them in the latter stages of the Champions League is what it's all going to come down to. Yeah, Dele Alli at Paris Saint-Germain, not the same level of pressure week in, week out, going to probably get a little bit more time on the ball. and obviously has a good relationship with Mauricio Pochettino, even though we saw in the documentary Jose having the chat with both Dele and with Harry of, yes, you can love your former manager, but that doesn't mean you can't love me as well. It does seem to have worked with Harry Kane, not quite the same with Dele Alli. What Premier League club right now was he going to go to? Chelsea? Possibly. You know, Manchester United, that ship seems to have sailed till the end of this season, at the very least, if not, you know, a year, 18 months down the line. So this is a good deal for Pochettino. You know, it'll be a big contract, a club where you're guaranteed a certain level of success, where you're going to win some trophies, guaranteed. But it's pressure in a different way, in that it all comes down to, you know, Champions League quarterfinal, Champions League semi-final. These are the games you simply have to win. But he needs to improve that squad as well. While they've got an unbelievable front three, behind that, there's not a huge amount for those bigger games.
Okay, go on.
I can already hear this clip going viral in Lille and Lyon as Nathan Murphy, Irish broadcaster, slams PSG's competitors. They're third in Ligue 1, Nathan.
Yeah, but it's been an unusual season.
By a point. TalkSport report that Declan Rice is Chelsea's only transfer target and they want to get that deal done in this window. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is that to happen in January, and what impact does Rice make at a club like Chelsea?
Well, I'd say that's a 3 out of 10 for January. Probably heading towards an 8 or 9 for next summer. Every time I watch Declan Rice, I'm more and more impressed. He's adding something to his game, his range of passing. He's, you know, still able to sit in that more holding role, but constantly bombing forward now, constantly involved in the attack. Yeah, it's a bit of a sickener when you watch Declan Rice play for West Ham, and it's only a matter of time before he goes to one of the biggest clubs in the Premier League or anywhere, because he's that good. He is going to be in that top rung of midfielders in world football, you feel, very, very soon, which is unfortunate. It does seem as though, I'm sure Lampard would fit him in as well. He's never quite, that's one of the problems, Lampard's never quite settled on that midfield. You know, N'Golo Kante's back in his preferred role at the weekend, but then the games before that, Jorginho's as the holding midfielder and Kante's sort of forced out to the right-hand side. Never been a particular fan of Kovacic in there. Still hasn't really given Kai Havertz a chance as a number eight, but maybe if you've Declan Rice as the six, Havertz alongside him, like, does it spell the end of N'Golo Kante if Declan Rice comes? Maybe it does.
Yeah, like, you know, all of a sudden you've got that squad depth and a bit of competition as well. ESPN reporting that Man City hope to pick up Sergio Ramos on a free transfer in the summer. Should they sign the 34-year-old, and how would he adapt to life in the Premier League?
I see this as a more of a Manchester United signing than a Manchester City signing. City have finally settled on something that works at the back. Ruben Dias has come in and made the sort of impact, probably a little bit more under the radar than what Virgil van Dijk did at Liverpool. But Dias has come in, plays every game, and they sort of rotate the partner alongside him, whether it's Stones or whether it's Nathan Ake, that they have now a rock-solid back four. Do you need to add a Sergio Ramos into that? Everything that was said about Dias coming in is that he is a big character, that he is a leader, that although he's a very young player, he's someone who's not just going to come in and need a little bit of bedding in time. He's going to become the rock at the heart of that defence, and he's lived up to that. Whereas actually, maybe looking at Manchester United, maybe another leader in that dressing room is exactly what they need. Somebody to share the burden a bit with Bruno Fernandes, and somebody who, you know, can slot in, doesn't need to play every single match because they've got a lot of options at the back. So I'm just not sure where Sergio Ramos fits in to that City team right now. Suddenly you're rotating three or four centre-backs alongside Dias, where, you know, he might be the perfect personality to fit into a Manchester United dressing room.
Yeah, OK. Do City need anything?
A striker. Right, they need somehow to find a replacement for Sergio Aguero. Who that is, how you go and find that player, and does he cost you 200 million quid? Like, is it Harry Kane? Again, that ship has probably sailed at this stage. But like, Jesus does a job, but, you know, he doesn't look as though he's ever going to score the rate of goals that Sergio Aguero scored, where you knew if Aguero played, and he rarely did it, played 34 or 35 games, he was going to get you 25 Premier League goals. Jesus just doesn't look to have that in him.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.